Firstly, let's take a look at the taxation of exchange gains. This can best be demonstrated with the aid of an illustration. Here we have Company A, which owes $2 million on the 31st of March 2011. During this year, no amounts have been repaid on the loan which was taken out some time ago. The exchange rates are as follows. On the 1st of April 2010, the rate was $1.46 to the pound, rising to $1.56 to the pound on the 31st of March 2011. The position on the loan is as follows. We have an opening balance translated back into sterling of £1,369,863 and a closing balance translated back into sterling of £1,282,051 and therefore a movement on the loan of £87,812. So what is this movement? We owed at the beginning of the accounting period £1.369 million. Pounds. At the end of the period, we owed only £1.282 million. Pounds. So therefore, the company has gained because it owes less to the bank at the end of the accounting period than it did at the beginning. So this will be a 4x gain. As far as the bank is concerned, of course, this will be a 4x loss, as it will actually get less for the $2 million at the end of the period than it would have done at the beginning. This movement, as far as Company A is concerned, is a taxable 4x gain, and this amount must be accounted for both in the accounts and, of course, for corporation tax purposes. So, how do we account for 4x movements in the corporation tax computation? The first question to ask is, what is the purpose of the transaction? Why have we borrowed the money or entered into this particular financial instrument? If it is for trading purposes, i.e. the result of the transaction is the generation of trading income, for instance, we borrow money to purchase a factory in America which is used for trading purposes, this would be a trading item. What drops out of the bottom, of course, would be debits or credits, the same definitions we apply to the accounts. A debit will therefore be an expense or a loss item, and a credit will be a gain or an income item. As far as trading is concerned, everything is classified within trade profits. Therefore, a 4x trading debit will be a trade expense, and a 4x trading credit will be trade income. Therefore, in the corporation tax computation, because this figure will have already have gone through the accounts, there is no need to make a separate adjustment, because what has been charged or allowed in arriving at the company's accounting profit is the same figure which is charged or allowed for tax purposes. If the item, however, relates to a non-trading item, for instance, a company borrows some money to buy a factory in America which it lets out, the income, of course, is taxed under the property business rules rather than as trading profit, and therefore this is a non-trading relationship. Debits and credits are treated slightly differently. All of the debits and credits arising end up in a non-trading pool. Care must be taken on the disposal of fixed assets, as they may give rise to loan relationships, which in turn give rise to foreign exchange gains and losses. Let us demonstrate this with an illustration. Company C owns a building in America which it bought 12 years ago for $2 million. The exchange rate at the time was $1.48 to the pound. The building is sold on the 31st of March 2010 for $3.5 million, when the exchange rate is $1.55 to the pound. The proceeds are left in an American bank account, and at the 31st of December 2010, the exchange rate is $1.56 to the pound. We will assume an indexation factor of 0.1. In the company's year ended 31st of December 2010, we have to bring in the gain on the sale of the building, and also the movement in the dollar account. Let us first of all take the capital gain. We translate the proceeds at the time of sale based on the exchange rate applying at the time of sale of $1.55 to the pound, giving us £2,258,065. We translate the cost of $2 million at the exchange rate applying at the time of acquisition of $1.48 to the pound, giving us a CGT base cost of £1,351,350. We then deduct from that indexation at 0.1, giving us indexation allowance of £135,135, and an overall chargeable gain of £771,579. Let us now take a look at the foreign exchange loss on the movement of the currency account, which is basically a loan relationship item, and therefore we will look at movements under generally accepted accounting principles. When the asset was sold, we put $3.5 million into an American bank account, which equated to £2,258,065. By the end of the accounting period, because the US exchange rate moved to 1.56, this is now only worth £2,243,590, and therefore we have a movement of £14,475. This is a Forex loss, because we actually have less in the bank account at the end of the period than we did when we first put it in there. So in summary, in the year ended 31st of December 2010, the company has a capital gain of £771,579, which is put into the corporation tax computation as a chargeable gain. The company also has an income loss of £14,475, which is likely to be relieved under the non-trading loan relationship rules, as depositing funds into a US bank account will be treated as a non-trading item, unless Company C happens to be a bank or money lender. We will now turn our attention to mandatory matching of gains and losses. Let us explain this with the aid of an illustration. Let us say we have a company here called LexisNexis PLC, which takes out a loan to purchase a factory in America. In order to fund this acquisition, LexisNexis PLC has to turn to the friendly bank manager and borrows $1 million to purchase the American factory. At the time the loan was taken out, the exchange rate was $2 to the pound, but by the end of the period, this had gone down to $1.8 to the pound. Let us take a look at the movement on the asset and liability. The opening value was £500,000. The closing value at the end of the accounting period is £566,556. So, we have a movement of £55,556. This represents a loss on the loan. When we took out the loan, we owed the American bank £500,000. We now owe them £555,556 simply because of the movement on the American exchange rates. However, this represents a gain on the factory. If we were to sell the factory, we would realise £555,556. So this is basically an unrealised gain on the factory, but of course we don't take account of this gain until we sell it. But we would take account of the loss on the loan relationship item on the accruals basis because it is a monetary item. However, provided the gain and loss are maintained in accordance with GAAP, the asset and the liability are automatically matched with each other for tax, and no loss will be recognised on the loan. Equally, if the exchange rate were to move the other way, no gain would be recognised either. So let us take a look at the method of matching that now applies. There are no restrictions on the type of assets that the movements and the liabilities can be matched against, as given by Statutory Instrument 2002, number 1970. So if we have matched items, how do we eventually tax or relieve any gains or losses? The amount deferred or matched will be brought back into charge to tax when the asset is disposed of as follows. Where the asset is a foreign business asset or shares covered by the substantial shareholding exemption, no gain or loss will arise on their disposal. If the asset is a loan relationship, a ship or an aircraft, then a loan relationship debit or credit will be brought in as part of the trade profits calculation, or as a non-trade debit in other situations. Where there is a no gain or no loss disposal of an asset under the capital gains tax reorganisation provisions, for instance, where we have had a share for share exchange, the amounts are further deferred and not brought into charge until the new asset is sold. This is the principle that applies where we have an approved reorganisation. That concludes this session on the tax treatment of foreign exchange gains.